The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, August the 13th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with Damian Gardner as he tries to set a land speed record for a sprint car at the Bonneville Salt Flats, and the Brazier family will stop by and talk with us about the World Series of Sprint Cars. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by Rod N Supply. They don't just sell them, they raise them. By Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Championship race teams like Donnie Schatz depend on quality parts to make it through a season. That's why they and other champions rely on Rod Ends from Rod End Supply.
Hi, this is Bob Douglas, and for 23 years, we have been delivering the best quality rod ends on the market, with on-time deliveries and customer service second to none. And this philosophy will continue.
To learn more about Rod End Supply, call them toll-free at 1-800-284-2902 or visit them online at rodendsupply.com. Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them.
Hi, this is Luke Bowie driving the 55AU. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. This next guest has been a frequent guest on our show. He's always one of the top contenders in the non-wing sprint car category. And right now he's at the Bonneville Salt Flats trying to establish a land speed record for a sprint car. We welcome in the Demon, Damian Gardner from Concord, California. Damian, always a pleasure to speak with you. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, man, always a pleasure to be on your show. Appreciate what you guys do.
Sure thing. Before we get to what's happening in Bonneville, I know you moved back to the West Coast this year. You had a great run there in the Midwest, running not only the Midwest tracks, but the USAC National Sprint Tour. I know you made a lot of fans here in central Pennsylvania. As you look back on it, what was some of the things that you're able to take away from your time in Indiana that's going to only help you further your sprint car career?
It was a tough go in the beginning. And, I was able to just hook up with a lot of really good guys, a lot of really good crew chiefs. I went through a few of them when I was out there, and all of them were great crew chiefs, and they all taught me a lot. And, as anyone knows, I work on the car myself, and I work on it and stuff, and the crew chief, he makes the calls, but I work on it myself, and these guys were able to just teach me a lot. In those 7 years or so I was there, just a lot of good guys, a lot of really smart guys, and we won some races, and they taught me a lot of stuff, and I feel like I know a lot more than I did before when I went there.
Well, you and I talked about 7 years ago when you first went there. It was going to be a very big learning curve. As you look back on it, what do you think of that learning curve was the biggest challenge that you had ahead of you? And what do you think was the one thing that you accomplished on that learning curve challenge?
It was a big challenge. I mean, Indiana was never itself was never kind to me, a lot of different reasons. Just different style tracks, different shapes, and we had a lot of success in the Midwest. Not as much in Indiana, but we were able to win there too. But it was a big challenge. I didn't really accomplish what I wanted to, but I'm satisfied with what I did accomplish and what I learned. Had a really great sponsor back then, and it's Pace and Pat Kehoe, it was a great adventure. So now we're moving on to this, and who knows where we'll go from here.
And final question on that aspect of running in Indiana, now going back to California. If you knew now what you knew then, would you still have done it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I would have done it. That's part of what I do. I mean, not only do I love driving sprint cars, but I love learning about them and learning how to go faster, be a better driver, have a better car, and I learned so much there that even applies out here that I'm using today to try to win races and be successful. Even stuff I'm using out here at Bonneville is just stuff I've learned from all the guys that I've been able to hook up with since I've been back there. There's no doubt that there's a lot of them back there, and I just appreciate all the people that helped me out.
Well, let's talk about Bonneville. What brought about this idea to build a sprint car that you could put on the Bonneville Salt Flats and become the fastest sprint car driver on the face of the earth?
Well, I mean, you know, I didn't have a job pretty much. I mean, I didn't know where I was going to end up. I mean, I knew I'd probably go back to California just because, it was sad when my friend and my sponsor, Pat, died and passed away. And he was a great guy for the sport. And I knew finding a guy like him would be tough. So I knew I'd go back home probably. And, like in anything I want to do, I want to be successful. So I'd come home and try to just take what I learned and be even more successful than I was. And I was sitting around at the PRI show thinking, well, if I'm going to have the year off per se, because I didn't have a ride at the time. And I thought, I was talking to Biggie, Steve Watt, and Maxwell Industries, and talking about just different things I could do. And we were actually sitting on the, leaning against on the Streamliner, the Speed Demon. And he said, hey, man, why don't we go to Bonneville? And I said, man, dude, I have a pavement car sitting around. And it just all started working out. So we started running around the show, and we got great people, Franklin Weld, all these people, Waterman, FK, all these guys came aboard and said, hey, we'll help you make the parts because we need special parts to come here. And they said, we'll do it. And I was able to hook up with some other guys, Surf and Sprint and Loud Pedal, and we're going to film it and make a documentary out of it. And, I'm just excited. Been excited about the whole thing.
So what was it like making that very first pass on the famed Bonneville Salt Flats?
Well, it's, I didn't know what to expect, but it's definitely really slick. I mean, getting up to speed is a big challenge, and the car moves around a lot. And so just trying to learn all that along with trying to make progress go faster and achieve the goals we wanted to achieve. And the first day was kind of rough. It went okay right out of the box, and then it got a little rough. And, the car was moving around, and we had to do some things to it to fix it. But ever since then, we've been making progress, and, my guys are working hard. I think every day we're there from 7 till, 9 at night. So just trying to make things better.
And how much progress have you made so far?
Well, I think, just see. I mean, we started out, we had to get licenses, so you can only go 125, then you can go 175. Oh, no, 125, then you got to go under 175, and then you can go under 200. So we've achieved those goals, and we've done it, pretty quickly, I think. Had a couple runs that didn't work out, but, every time you go a little faster, you have to figure out what you need to do to make the car handle good. So I think we're on track,
And today, what was your fastest speed so far?
Today we went roughly, I think we went 185. Seven or something, and that was what we were shooting for. We had to go over 175, and we couldn't go over 200 because we had to get another license. And so just to be safe, because if you go over 200, it doesn't count. So we went 185, and we realized a couple more things about the car, so we'll fix them for tomorrow, and so tomorrow we'll shoot for 200.
I'm looking at a picture of the car right now, and I see the tires have the salt on them, and they look, so much different than what we're seeing on a traditional sprint car. Tell us about the car itself. How closely is it to a traditional non-wing sprint car, and what are some of the differences that you feel with this car going in a straight line that you may not feel with your traditional sprint car?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much the same as a pavement sprint car. I mean, same wheelbase, same everything. It's obviously, you can see the body in the pictures and stuff that, we've shaped it up a little bit, and Victory Race Cars pounded out some good aluminum for it, made it look good, and kind of made it look a little retro with some nice aluminum tail tank and stuff. But, I mean, it's pretty much basically, there's a couple things on there that, per se, wouldn't run on a non-wing sprint car, but we're doing that, because we're on Bonneville, and we want it to look like a Bonneville sprint car, so that's what we did, and it's not a lot different. I mean, you can kind of see what's different. The tires are different, and the body looks a little different, but, a lot of sprint cars are a little different looking still.
And, Damian, what about the speed? I mean, what is it like when you're looking at your tachometer, you have an idea about what your speed is? What's it like as you're increasing speed and going down the salt flats?
Yeah, I mean, getting up to speed is kind of like, it's super slick. So you really got to pedal it, and it moves around a lot. And then when you start getting up to speed, when you get up to 100 miles an hour or so, it settles down a little bit. But I would say like the drift, you know, when you spin the tires a little bit, the drifts become longer. You know, you more slide, kind of drift sideways, and you kind of move around the track. But, you know, by the time you drift and move, you probably went, you know, 200 yards, you know. So it's kind of just drifts sideways at, you know, at that speed, you know, for 50 yards or so, and then it straightens back out, and then it might hook and go the other way a little bit. But, you know, it's you know, all the stuff I've learned driving non-race sprint cars is applying, you know. I mean, pedaling it and keeping it straight, you know. I mean, it's just the same thing here.
Looking at the picture, it looks like the front of the car, it aerodynamically, of course, has the rounded nose, but also you have a shield for the sun there. What about your vision? What's the vision like, and what do you see as a driver as you're going down in terms of the markers that are there on the salt flats to let you know what portion of the road or the race course you were on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're looking out there, I mean, the salt is amazingly flat. So when you're looking out, I mean, you can see in front of you, and it's just white for as far as you can see. And then I can see off in the distance, you know, a little glimpse of the mountain way off there, you know, and you can see that. And off to the sides, you know, you can just see cones, and it's marked off, you know. They have them marked off with cones, and you get to the 1 mile and the 2 mile and the 3 mile, and they have them marked off. And you get up to speed, basically like today would be, you get up to speed by the 2 mile, and then they time you between the 2 and the 3. So by the time you get to the 2, like on one run, you know, I entered the 2 a little slow, so I had to pick up some speed, and by the time I exited the 3, and, you know, that's when the car gets a little, moves around a little bit, because I'm trying to get the most out of it, and it squeezes, moves around and stuff. So, you can kind of realize you're traveling a lot of distance in a short amount of time just because how the car moves. It doesn't get real twitchy per se, like the back doesn't come out, you know, real suddenly. It just more drifts out, and then you kind of take a big slide, and it'll move over. It might jump sideways, like I said, like 50 yards. It might move over one or two cars, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what about radio communications? Tell us a little bit about what kind of radio communications you have with the race course and with your crew.
Yeah, no, I don't have any radio communications, so
oh, wow.
It's just me in the car, and I don't really know. Like I said, I pretty much go by where I need to be as far as the markers on the track, and then I know where I need to be based on my tack, you know. And we, like, up until now, we're shooting for goals. You know, we're trying to achieve a certain speed, and then we don't want to go over, and you don't want to go under. So that's a little more difficult because you have to really pay attention to the tack. When it comes to tomorrow, we'll probably just be more going all out. So I'll just be going from the time I leave the truck, I'll just be going all out to get, you know, as fast as I can go by that time, you know.
And see, I've watched some of the Bonneville Salt Flats in the past, but I did not know that you don't have any radio communications. So that literally you are a man alone with his thoughts rocketing down the Bonneville Salt Flats. We're talking with the Demon,
yeah.
Damian Gardner here, who's trying to become the world's fastest sprint car driver on land, and of course multi-time winner and champion with the United States Auto Club. So as you get closer to Friday, what do you feel as a driver, since you guys know the speed of the car so well, what do you think this car can actually do when it comes to making that final run?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I think 200 is achievable. And, you know, I hope that's what we can get to tomorrow. And, you know, I don't know. I think 225, 250 is way out there, you know, meaning 250 would be great, and if tomorrow goes like today, then 250 might be achievable. You know, if we run into some stumbling blocks tomorrow, then I don't know. But, you know, for right now, my goal is to go over 200 and see how it is at 200, and then we'll do what we do every night, which is work on the car and get a plan ready for the next day. And, you know, we're kind of looking at 200 for tomorrow, and we'll know by tomorrow night what we, you know, have a better idea where we can go from there.
And Damian, how much time is there in terms of downtime between the run and another run that you get during the day?
Well, I mean, you pretty much just get back in line. You know, it's a long way to the pits. I mean, it's like 3 miles to the pits. So, you don't really go back to the pits. You go back and you just get in line. And as you get, right now we're probably in the most common line where everyone's going. And so tomorrow we can move up to the 5 mile track. We're on the 3 mile track today. So tomorrow we get the license that we got today. We can move to the 5 mile. And there's less cars going that fast. So we'll be able to make more runs. And so that'll be handy. And we pretty much just come back, get back in line, make adjustments on the car in line, and tune what we got to tune, and make another run. And if it's really sketchy, you know, then we go back to the pits and think about it a little more and make bigger changes.
I was curious, what size fuel cell do you have on the car?
It's got 10 gallons. So
is that methanol?
And, yep, 10 gallons of alcohol, just like a regular sprint car.
Just like a regular. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we want to wish you all the best of luck, because that's pretty courageous to jump in that machine. But, and again, you got some of the best in the business, as you were mentioning before, building that for you. But we do want to wish you the best of luck and Godspeed, and hoping that you will be able to break that 200-mile-an-hour mark and become the world's fastest sprint car driver.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, like I said, I appreciate you guys taking the time to, you know, cover our sport and do all that you do for our sport. We appreciate it, and you know, I just hope I can get to our goals, and just want to thank everybody that's helped me involved in doing this a little bit out of the box. And guys have had to do special things, and it's a pain in the butt sometimes, but, you know, I just really appreciate it.
All right, the Demon, Damian Gardner, joining us here on the Dirt Track Show on the Sprint Car Show as he tries to set a land speed record at the Bonneville Salt Flats in a really unique sprint car. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, the Brazier family is up next. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Hi, this is Brian Monteith. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
And welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. We continue our preseason conversation with drivers in Australia, and this gentleman really needs no introduction. He is the six-time Australian champion. And back in 1993-94, he was the World Series of Sprint Car champion, and he is returning to the World Series of Sprint Cars along with his 16-year-old son, Jordan, this year. We welcome in one of the living legends of sprint car racing in Australia, Gary Brazier. Gary, welcome to the broadcast. It's an absolute honor to talk to you, sir.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to be on the show. Appreciate it for the call.
Oh, sure thing. Well, thank the folks over at World Series of Sprint Cars for helping us out. And as we mentioned, 20 years ago, you're getting back into the saddle with the World Series of Sprint Cars. Why now? What made you guys decide to get back onto the road and tour this year with the World Series of Sprint Cars?
Well, basically, it's time for my son to sort of start getting out on the road and learn his craft as a sprint car driver. And you know, the best way to do it is World Series Sprint Cars in Australia to travel to all the different racetracks. And I've been there and done it over the years, but I just thought it'd be good to go along and I'll compete again in this World Series and have a little bit of fun with him on the way. And if he keeps showing a lot more potential like he's showing right now, you never know, maybe I'll step down from it and just go settle along with him being the race car driver. But for right now, I still feel pretty young. I'm only just turned 40, so I think there's plenty of races there for me to try and win. And it'd be great to maybe, be in contention for a World Series title again.
What do you see in your son at his age of 16 that maybe you saw in yourself at your age of 16 when you were racing?
Well, my dad was probably a little bit tougher on me. I wasn't allowed to start racing sprint cars until I was 18.
Okay.
You know, Brooke Tatnall and Robbie Farr and a couple of other guys, they got to start at 16, but my dad made me go to work and get an apprenticeship and get my black license, as they called it back then, before I was allowed to start racing. So, you know, I got the opportunity and went to America and crew with Steve Kinzer and Jeff Swindell and, you know, a few of the guys. And, you know, I just learned how to work on a race car first. And, you know, when I got 18, you know, he gave me that chance to start racing.
How pivotal, Gary, was that in your career to come over here and work with two of the great legends in our sport?
Well, you know, they came out to Australia and, you know, my dad had been racing with, you know, a lot of the Americans over the, you know, in the 60s and 70s and 80s and stuff. And, yeah, fortunately, I got to meet him as a young boy and, you know, they gave me that opportunity to come over there and work. I went over with a good friend of mine, Jamie Colby, and he introduced me to Jeff Swindell, and that's where I started. And then Jeff wasn't following on with the Outlaws, so I got the chance to go with Steve and Cole Kinzer. And, you know, I took that with both hands and, you know, done the next 30 or so races out through California. And it was a learning experience. You know, it was great to be able to work with Cole Kinzer. And, well, you know, I was just a tire guy and just a cleaner. You know, I was just there to do whatever job I could do and, you know, just pay attention to what they were doing. So that's what I did, and following you, I started racing.
And from that experience, Gary, what did you take away that enabled you to have such a successful career as a sprint car driver and a continued successful career here as you get back into the saddle with the World Series of Sprint Cars?
Well, I always had the determination to be a race car driver even before I, you know, started racing. You know, it was my lifelong goal to, you know, I'd been around it my whole life and, you know, I just really wanted to do it. I love the sport and, you know, I've seen so many great race car drivers and, I just always wanted to be one of those. And, you know, to work with them guys in America and, you know, and go with Steve and, you know, he dominated back then, you know, when I was there, even, you know, before and after that. But just to be with a competitive team that, you know, that done the job, they done it properly, and they intimidated people. You know, they were there and they won nearly every single race, you know, and there was no better feeling than to see what it was all about. And, and I was just hoping one day, you know, we could be dominant and win a few races ourselves.
Well, speaking of intimidation, as you sat back and watched and did your job with Steve and watching Carl Kinzer, what do you think it was about that combination that was intimidating to the other drivers out on the circuit?
Well, I guess the biggest, I mean, Steve had he just had a mindset. He was there to win. And, you know, so did Carl Kinzer. And Carl's obviously, you know, known as he was the smartest guy in racing. He could set the car up and he made them race cars do, you know, the perfect job. But, you know, you got to remember that Steve Kinzer actually, the race car's not always going to be perfect. And that's the job, it just can't be done. You know, you try and get it as good as you can and you need that driver to be able to outsmart the car if it's just not good enough. And Steve Kinzer was the kind of driver that he had the motivation to, if the car wouldn't turn the corner, he'd make it turn. And, you know, just basically, if you got in his way, he'd make you move out of his way. You know, that was just his goal. His mindset was there to win, and, you know, it was great to watch. And it still is great to watch. At the end of the day, he's still racing. He's still, you know, one of the living legends of sprint car racing. And, you know, Donnie Shotton's the next guy coming through that's going to probably take over, you know, his mantle of that. But, you know, there's still a lot of good race car drivers out there.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting up with Steve's brother Randy and his father Bob out at Bloomington back in May when I was out covering the non-wing circuit and the Indianapolis 500, and I could see where Bob would be a pretty intimidating person back in the day as well, but what a super nice guy and just a great racing family. And you are correct, with Donnie Schatz picking up his 7th win this past week in the Knoxville Nationals in the last 8 years, and I know he's come down and he's pocketed a few $50,000 to win events in Australia as well, so he's done pretty good for himself. So what was it like then when you came over to race, and tell me a little bit about your experiences racing here in the States?
My first sort of opportunity to start racing, I had a couple of goes out in California. I drove for a guy named Ted Finkenbinder and, you know, Rick Hurst, and you know, I've actually had a couple of decent rides even in California when I first started. Then I went back out, I spent a year there, then I went back out to Knoxville and gave me an opportunity in his race car. His grandson actually broke his arm, and the chance got to be driving his car at the Knoxville Nationals a few races on the regular shows. So I learned a little bit there, and then the next season, my father gave me the opportunity again, and got me a race car, and I spent the next two seasons or two and a half seasons racing at Knoxville weekly. And that really taught me how to be smooth and to try and run a cushion without making mistakes for 30 laps. So then I went to Pennsylvania for the next 2.5 years, and that sort of taught me how to race a bit tougher. that they're there to put food on their table, and they don't muck around. So I got banged around a little bit, but it was definitely a good learning curve.
I guess the saying is true then that the outlaws come to Pennsylvania to learn how to be sprint car drivers.
Well, I mean, they just learn how to race tough. And, them guys, they all race hard together. And, they're pretty nice to each other. But when it comes to passing, they will move you. That's just the way racing is. And, they don't deliberately try and go out and crash you. But, when you get the little bump and it's time for you to move, I think you better move, because the next one's not going to be a little soft pump.
Can you compare what it was like those 2.5 years out at Knoxville compared to the 2.5 years you raced here in Central Pennsylvania?
Well, it's sort of, in some ways, it's a little bit hard to compare, because when I went to Knoxville, I was still learning to be, to become, sort of a race car driver. I could sort of show you where, I had the race car. At the time, I had a Gambler race car and a Gary Stanton engine. And, I'd go out in time trial for the first 3 months, and I could do my best. I could do a 17-second laps, and it was pretty frustrating. I'd be in the B main a fair few times, and I just couldn't. I kept twitching the car, and then after a while, the same car and the same motor. 4 months later, I was getting quick time with 16.0. So it was definitely never the car's fault or the motor's fault. It was just learning how to drive the racetrack and the race car. And by the time I went back up to Pennsylvania after then a couple of years, I stood on the throttle and I just wanted to, I just wanted to run around the top. That was sort of my goal. I remember the first time I went to Williamsgrove and I drove into turn three wide open. I didn't even think I had to lift, and that wall come up awful fast coming off turn four, and, my right rear banked straight into that, and, I was popping wheelies and I didn't know where I was headed.
Oh, jeez.
But, I just didn't know no better, and same thing there. I had to learn something.
Of the tracks in Central Pennsylvania, did you enjoy one from the other? And what do you think made Central Pennsylvania such a unique place for an Australian to come and learn what it's like to race for, as you said before, putting food on your table?
I liked all the tracks out there. I mean, I struggled at a couple. Like Hagerstown, I really struggled. It gets real slick, and, a lot of the guys ran around the bottom there, and, I just wasn't that good at it. I kept running to the inside fence, and I'd bounce out in the middle of the racetrack, and so I'd get frustrated, and just I'd be, the only car up against the outside fence. But I had a guy named David Brown Senior. He used to help me back out there, and for a while, and he helped me get the cars a lot better, and tried to teach me, to be a bit better of a race car driver. But if I was to pick any, I'd have to say Lincoln was probably my favourite racetrack to race at on a Saturday night. I used to go up to Port Royal because I had a sponsor up there called D&I Paving up at Port Royal, and so every second week I'd be at Port Royal. I really did love racing Lincoln the best on the Saturday, and Williamsgrove is a racetrack where it's sort of one of its own. You've just got to learn how to drive that racetrack. I still today wouldn't be able to drive 3 and 4 around the bottom. I just was never any good at it. One and two I could handle, but 3 and 4, I just have to keep going to the fence, and that's probably where I'd lose a lot of races, to be honest.
That's pretty interesting thoughts there on Williamsgrove Speedways. We're talking with Gary Brazier, the 6-time Australia Sprint Car Champion, and heading back to the World Series of Sprint Cars to travel throughout Australia here in the upcoming winter, our winter time, your guys' summertime. You also, while you're here in here in the States, you had a couple famous car owners that you drove for. Tell the fans a little about who you drove for while you were here in Pennsylvania.
Fortunately enough, I got I was driving for myself, and then I got the opportunity to drive for Bob Wyckett. you know, and as soon as I got asked that opportunity, I jumped straight at it. You don't get too many opportunities to drive for a living legend car owner at the time, and he gave me the best chance I could, and I think we ended up doing like 3.5 months together. Obviously, you know, with any team you have your ups and downs, and I went back out that year. I sort of finished off in my own car and done the National Open. I got the opportunity to drive for him, and then, five or six years later, I got the opportunity to drive for Walt Dyer in the 461 Brick car. So, I've had a couple of good ones there, but, my first big opportunity was to drive for Gary Stanton, with the World of Outlaws, with the Mopar team, and Gary Stanton's been a family friend of ours, since I started racing in the 90s, and, he gave me a couple of chances like that also.
Well, obviously, when you're talking about Walt Dyer and Bob Weicker, you're talking about two of the best sprint car owners here in central Pennsylvania. Who were some of the guys outside the fast Freddie Raymers? Who were some of the guys that you enjoyed racing with back in your days here in central PA?
There's a lot of great race car drivers out there. Chris Reese was on the top of his game at that time, and, Keith Kaufman and all that. They've been racing for a long while, and I got to race. It was good. I got to race with Lance Ruiz and Todd Schaefer, and Freddie was probably my biggest competitor, because we'd race at Lincoln together, and he was the best there was. I mean, at Lincoln he won 10-12 in a row. They used to have bounty on his head to someone could stop beating him. fortunately enough for myself, I actually got to beat him one time, and it might have only been once, but once was better than never being able to do it. So, it was great to be able to race against him. And, he showed for the last, 30 years that he's been racing that even today he's still on the top of his game. And, he's a true legend from Pennsylvania. And, it's going to be sad to see that him retire. But, I'm sure he's going to put all of his effort into his son. And, that's the goal of a father, to try and put all your efforts into the next generation.
And Keith Kaufman is retiring at the end of this year as well, so we have two gentlemen retiring. Of course, over the weekend, we lost a guy who went over and raced for Bob Trussell in Australia, and that is the legendary Pink Panther, Kramer Williams. And so it's been a bit of a rough year here, sprint car-wise, with three deaths, and I'm ready for the year to get over in 2014. Hopefully it's a better sight than what we've had so far this year.
Been a hard year for sprint car racing, and it was a sad sort of thing to see to Kramer go. He's been racing for a long time, but it was good to see JJ Grasso win on that Sillings Grab the other night in one of his cars, and I got to see his family go up there and get a photo with him and stuff like that, and it's a hard time for sprint car racing, but it is part of our sport, and any motor racing it does get dangerous, but we always seem to lose the people we love the most.
That's true. Let me ask you, with the national media in Australia, and of course, if I'm not mistaken, the pecking order is sort of up there around the fact that you have rugby league, rugby union, and footy, although we won't talk about my boys in Carlton this year. It's been we lost to Collingwood, and that was not good, and I'll leave it at that. And then you have V8 supercars. So when you have an unfortunate incident, as we had over last weekend with the passing of Kramer Williamson, how is the Australian national media in terms of their coverage of it? Good, bad, and different? What do they do when we have an unfortunate tragedy in Australia?
We've had a couple here in Speedway at Parramatta where we had a couple of fellas pass away that raced midget cars, and then they thought it was cool because they didn't have a wing on it and stuff like that. But then there was a young fella, that passed away in a sprint car at Parramatta a couple of years ago. That hit hard down to the community. He had a lot of great friends, and he was a kid that was coming up in the sport. But it's like everything you sort of seem to find. It's like Dale Earnhardt when he crashed his NASCAR. They've come up with better safety solutions for their seats, for their neck restraints. Everything happens for some reason, and if we can keep getting more safety aspects to keep the drivers safe, that's how the sport does grow, and in each sport in their own. So, it's a tough lesson, but as we know, it does happen, and it's just unfortunate. times.
Well, Gary, taking your hat off as a driver for a second and putting the hat on as a dad, what are your thoughts on sending your son out against some of the best in Australia here with the World Series of Sprint Cars in terms of safety that is currently available for racing today?
I think he'll be all right. At the end of the day, I'm only going to get Schnee cars this season, and he's going to have two, they call them like sissy bars on the sides of the race cars. It'll just enclose that side to where, if he spun out, a car can't get too close into the side of your arms. Basically, you're just trying to do whatever you can to keep the safety for him. He's got a proper seat, he's wearing a Butler beat suit, and like the Simpson safety, like Hans device. But you can't really do too much, to be honest with you. You've got to go there and hope that everything's okay. And he's racing against the best guys in Australia, and a few guys that come from America. So you are racing with the top guys, and if he makes a mistake, they are quite good enough to avoid it. And that's his job to be able to come good enough driver to avoid accidents that he can, you can sort of see them before they do happen.
What do you think about the safety today in terms of yourself as a driver? Are there areas where there can be improvements at the track, improvements in the seats, improvements in the helmets? What's your overall take on where does safety need to go to get to the next level to be even more safe than we already are at present time?
I'm not really sure. I'm probably not the best to ask on a thing like that because I'm a bit stubborn and old school, where I don't even have the head stuff around my seat. I'm still just wearing a normal old seat, and I wear a Liat device, which is still a good device for the head and neck restraint. But like the seat and all that, I've been in a fair few race car accidents. I just think that I'm not sure. Like, it was unfortunately, a good friend of mine, Kevin Gobrick, he passed away, as we knew. Oh, Jesus, 10 years probably now. And it was, from a little strap that now we hold our steering rod with. Like I said, for an accident, accidents happen and then we learn from it, and we just, we keep trying to build safer products for us drivers. And, I don't know which way to go, to be honest with you.
And as you guys embark on this 2013-2014 World Series of Sprint Car season, what advice are you going to pass along to Jordan, and what are your guys' expectations for getting back out onto the road this year?
The only advice I can give Jordan is, just try and go out and do the best you can each night. And like I said, you've got to try and just not make too many mistakes. You're better off being a bit slower and smoother to be fast rather than erratic and tear race cars up, because you start tearing race cars up, there's not too many people out there that's just going to keep replacing them. Fortunately for him, he's going to be driving for his grandfather, so he's going to be okay probably in that aspect. But you definitely don't want to get there and wreck stuff. You give each driver, and he knows every one of them. He got the race with him last year in his rookie year. He's watched him race since he's grown up as a young boy. Basically, you just got to give them room. You've got to be nice, because if you start being a bit rough on someone, if they're more experienced, they're going to give it straight back. So, and you'll probably end up the worse off. What we want to accomplish as a team, like I said just there for Jordan, it's just make as many A mains and finish as many laps as he can. Everything else will, like point systems and stuff like that, will rely on its own. I'm probably just, for myself, I'm going to go out there and try and, hopefully win as many races as I can. Be competitive each night. I've probably never really done competing in World Series over the 20 years. I've never really worried about a points system where I've just gone out to win as many races as I can. And I used to take probably opportunities to either were there or weren't there. And if I ended up upside down, well, that was just the way it was. I just raced to win. And but this year, I will look at it. I'll be definitely trying to get as many podiums as I can. And, I have got a goal to, try and go out there and be in the top three. But there's a lot of good young kids that are, that are coming through, like James and Steve Lyons and that. And, then you've got Tim Kading and Shane Stewart that everyone knows how good they are, and if I can keep up with them, well, I'm probably doing half okay for the season.
And Gary, any chance that you and your son might be heading back to the States in the near future?
Yes, we're definitely going to try and come over there next season. We were going to try and come this season. It was a bit disappointing probably for Jordan not to get to go over there this year and race, but when you make a commitment to World Series and for Australia this year, we had a lot of work to do to get another truck built for ourselves and try and get the cars and all the equipment in line for it, because whether it's the World of Outlaws or World Series, it's still a big commitment to try and make sure you're there every night, because they race 20 races in 2 months, or it's pretty close racing each night. So, we're definitely going to go over there and get him some more experience. And like I said, I might do a couple more years and see how he's going. It all depends on how well he's going to what happens with my racing. But, we're both competitive. It'll be great. And hopefully we can both keep racing together.
Well, Gary, that sounds great. We want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us here on the Sprint Car Show. It's been very quite a pleasure to speak with you. And we're going to take a short break and come back. We're actually going to hear from your son. So we thank you for your time, and we look forward to hearing what young Jordan has to say about growing up in the shadows of a famous racing family.
No worries. All right, thank you for that. Appreciate it. It's been great to be on the show.
Sure thing. Gary Brazier, the six-time Australian Sprint Car Champion, the 93-94 World Series of Sprint Car Champion. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Jordan Brazier. That's all coming up next. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Championship race teams like Donnie Schatz depend on quality parts to make it through a season. That's why they and other champions rely on Rod Ends from Rod End Supply.
Hi, this is Bob Douglas, and for 23 years, we have been delivering the best quality rod ends on the market, with on-time deliveries and customer service second to none. And this philosophy will continue.
To learn more about Rod End Supply, call them toll-free at 1-800-284-2902 or visit them online at rodendsupply.com. Rod End Supply, they don't just sell them, they race them. Well, welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. As we mentioned, we were just talking, if you're just joining us now, with Gary Brazier, the six-time Australian Sprint Car Champion. We now bring in his son, 16-year-old Jordan Brazier, who's making his sophomore season now in the World Series of Sprint Cars. Jordan, thanks so much for taking time out of your work day there with your dad to join us here on the Sprint Car Show. We welcome you here to the broadcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. It's going to be good.
It's a pleasure to talk with your family. What was it like as a kid growing up and going to the races and watching your grandfather, watching your dad race?
Yeah, growing up as a kid, watching my father raced sprint cars, well, winning Australian titles. It was great. I've always wanted to do it since I was a young kid, watching my grandfather Steve working on the cars, making it so much better for Dad, winning all those six Australian titles and winning all those races he's done in his career, and hopefully I can do the same.
Jordan, what was it about watching the races? What was it about sprint cars that you mentioned just a moment ago at a young age? Is that what you wanted to do?
It's intense. It's awesome racing. Like, you can't guarantee a winner. It's hard to say who will win because it's always unexpected.
Now, I mentioned with your dad just a little while ago, of course, you have the Aussie rules football, and as folks have come to know now, I'm a lifelong diehard, dyed-in-the-wool Carlton fan, so we won't mention about what happened against Collingwood because that was just unspeakable. But you have Aussie rules football, you have rugby, you have rugby union. Any of those sports, did you ever think about that you want to play them, or was it from that moment that you got hooked on sprint cars, that's what you wanted to do?
Well, I haven't been a fan of Aussie rules or rugby union, but I played rugby league, which is NRL, at a young age, until I was 14. Then I got out of that and set my eyes on being a sprint car driver. I've always wanted to be one. It's just how I was brought up and all I wanted to do in my life.
Now, outside of your dad, who did you enjoy watching race a sprint car as you were a kid growing up in Australia?
Well, I've always liked watching my dad because he's just around the top every race, and he can make it work. If it's not there, he'll make it work. And but I also enjoyed when the Outlaws came to Parramatta at once. I forget what year it was, but I really enjoyed watching Steve Kinn's Donny Shops win the 50,000 at Parramatta several times. And like we saw Sammy came out to Parramatta, and I think it was Craig Kinzo who just came out in his first year.
And of course, Donnie just winning the big Knoxville Nationals this past weekend. He has a habit of winning those big races, and as I mentioned to your father, he's walked away with a few of those $50,000 loots. I bet you that would be nice for you to do one day and knock old Donnie off the podium and walk away with a $50,000 win show up there at Parramatta.
Yeah, that would be great. But the big one I got my eyes on set for is 151 Knoxville Nationals.
There you go. So, Jordan, what was it like in your rookie year in World Series of Sprint Car? Take me through the season, the highs and the lows, and what did you learn about yourself throughout the entire year?
The rookie season went pretty good for me, I reckon. I had a couple of crashes, but that's just part of racing. And made some pretty good shows. Started from the end, like making my way through the B mains, because I was happy to start from last every race, the first couple of meetings, because I was a rookie. Yeah, making the show, making the show at Murray Bridge, the first time there, making the 50,000, and a couple of World Series races. I enjoyed that.
And as a young driver, but with a very famous last name, what's it like in the pits? How do the competitors treat you? And what's it like out on the racetrack, knowing that everybody knows the reputation of your father? So are you the same as your father in terms of going up on the cushion, or do you have a different driving style?
I think people think that I'll be going around top, but I want to be able to race anywhere on the track. Wherever it's good, that's where I want to be. And, it's just, I am who I am and see how we go.
Now, your dad mentioned he learned a lot from working with Steve and Carl Kinzer, and, of course, your grandfather, very good mechanic, and I'm sure you've watched Dad work on the race cars. What is your role in terms of how much hands-on are you on a race car, and where do you think you are still learning about a 410 sprint car in terms of the mechanical side of it?
Well, I've still got a lot to learn about the mechanical side of the 410 sprint car racing. The car's teaching me a lot in my rookie season, and even before that, I just didn't quite understand it as much when I was when I was younger. But I'm learning a lot now because I'm racing, feeling what the sprint car is like when we do certain adjustments on the car. But I can change tires, do all the get ready for wash, all that kind of stuff.
Now, in terms of your fellow competitors, who are the guys that you talk with and learn from, and who are some of your good friends on the circuit?
I've got a couple of friends at Parramatta, Jason Dillon. He's also dealing the World Series with me, so that will be good racing with him. Two young rookies going for World Series, going for the Rookie of the Year. James McFadden, I talk to him a fair bit when we get the same track. He tells me a fair bit. That's about it, I'd say.
We just had James on last week. He put on quite a show on the Third Mile High Banked Grandview Speedway dirt track here in central Pennsylvania. Came up a little bit short, unfortunately, had a little bit of a issue with a lap car, but he definitely put on a show. So there's a guy like yourself, young, and he's definitely got a bright future. Dad said that you guys are possibly looking at coming over here to the States next season. How exciting will that be for you to come over here and race in America?
Yeah, it will be excellent for me to come over to America. I think we'll be racing around Pennsylvania, actually. I'll learn a lot over there. Race twice as many races that we do here. And get the race at the famous Williams Grove and all that kind of stuff in Pennsylvania, and hopefully make our way to Knoxville at the end of our tour over there. So that will be pretty good.
Well, we definitely have to get you up here to the Sealands Grove Speedway and let you try out the fastest half mile on the East Coast. If you like speed, my friend, you will definitely like Sealands Grove Speedway. We're talking with Jordan Brazier, the son of Gary Brazier, who is climbing the ladder, as they say, in his early years of sprint car racing in Australia. Any favorite venue so far that you are racing at and getting comfortable with a sprint car?
Yeah, I'm getting really comfortable with Sydney Speedway. That's at Parramatta. Quite a few shows there. I also liked Adelaide Speedway City. That was a pretty good track. That's where I made my first World Series feature race. All the other tracks I've only been to once.
What will it be like being out in the road with Dad and Grandpa Steve and traveling the circuit and going after, you know, the World Series Sprint Car Championship this year? What do you think the season's going to be like?
I reckon it's going to be a good season this year. Just try to stay out as many crashes as possible, finish as many races as we can. Yeah, it'll be good to go on the road with Pa and Dad. Learn a lot going through the World Series, heading up to Perth, long trips. Yeah, it'll be good.
Expectations for yourself this year. What kind of goals do you have set, and what do you feel are some of the areas you still have to work on to improve on as you continue here with your young sprint car career?
Well, areas I have to improve on would be just time trial. That's the big one. If you don't time trial good, then you lose too many points and you're in the B main, then you're starting off the back of the A. But, my goals this season will be try and make as many feature races as possible during the World Series and stay out of most crashes as possible. And I try contend for the Rookie of the Year. That's also the big one.
So, Jordan, at the end of World Series, how do you think when you and Dad and your grandfather sit back and look back on the season, what do you think would define success for the team overall at the end of the World Series?
We'll look at from the start how good I was going then, and at the end see if I have improved, like driving or my driving style, try not to make as many errors, and trying to keep up with Dad, I guess.
That'll be a tall order, but it sounds like you're definitely ready to handle it. Well, Jordan, we want to thank you so much for taking time out of the day there at the family business to chat with us here on the Sprint Car Show. All the best of luck to you, your dad, and your grandfather in the World Series of Sprint Cars this year, and we look forward to having you and the family over here in Central Pennsylvania in the 2014 season.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure thing. Jordan Brazier, the son of Gary Brazier, joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more of our show right after this.
The world leader in suspension technology, Penske Racing Shocks has been providing custom-built, high-performance shock absorbers to all forms of racing for over 20 years. Offering only the highest quality suspension products, shocks are available in non, single, double, triple, and four-way adjustable configurations. All Penske Racing Shocks are hand-built, tailored to meet a driver's feel or car setup, and dyno-tested, ensuring the highest attention is paid to detail, consistency, and performance. For your short track needs, contact Dave Reedy at Penske Shocks at 610-375-6180. That's 610-375-6180. Penske Racing Shocks are available direct from the manufacturer or through many dealers worldwide. Visit them on the web at www.penskeshocks.com. Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions.
Hi, this is Bad Chad Leighton. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show. Special thanks to our guests, Jordan Brazier, Gary Brazier, and Damian Gardner for joining us on today's broadcast. And congratulations are in order for Donnie Schatz for winning his seventh Knoxville Nationals in the last 8 years. And to Steve Kinzer picking up win number 575 at McCool Junction in Nebraska on Tuesday night. Join us again next Tuesday, August the 20th, for another edition of the Sprint Car Show right here on the DirtTrackChannel.com, brought to you by Rod End Supply. They don't just sell them, they race them. And by Penske Racing Shocks, the competitive advantage of champions. And by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Sean Wood.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.